Welcome to Off Script with Dan Dwyer on Robin Hood Radio, featuring in-depth interviews with guests from the world of theater and allied arts. Underwriting support from Johnny Cake Books in Salisbury, Connecticut, whose collection of rare collectible and out-of-print books is housed in a 19th century cottage in one of the most old-fashioned small towns in New England. And now, here's the host of Off Script, Dan Dwyer.
Well, thanks, Marshall, and welcome to Off Script. What do God Bless America, Over the Rainbow, and All the Way have in common? Well, they're all great, beloved song classics, but the guys who wrote them, Irving Berlin, Harold Arlen, and Jimmy Van Heusen, have been dramatized and characterized damn well in a reunion of a fascinating new musical that's having its world premiere at the Berkshire Theatre Group in Stockbridge. The play is called Coming Back Like a Song, and my guest today is the play's author, Lee Kalshon. Lee's no stranger to showbiz, having spent a career writing for film, for stage, and for television, for which he's won an Emmy for one of the greatest and most important television sitcoms of all time, All in the Family. Welcome, Lee.
Thank you.
I'd love to make a whole show about Norman Lear and All in the Family and
Norman,
all of that.
Norman is a mensch, a wonderful man.
But we're talking about you today and your new play, Coming Back Like a Song. So let's get to that. Congratulations on it. I saw it, I guess, the week before last, and I was really taken by how innovative it was in putting together these three great, the personal, stories of these three great song masters, and also how the director and the music director and you put in three dozen songs and in woven into about 90 minutes. But before we get into all this, where did you come up with the notion to put Irving Berlin, Harold Arlen, and Jimmy Van Heusen together?
I was listening to Jonathan Schwartz's show. For those of you who don't know, he had a show in New York in which he played a lot of great songs from Broadway. And I think John Lahr was on it, Bert Lahr's son, is a great writer himself. And they talked about, they said, well, Jimmy Van Heusen, Harold Arlen, and Irving Berlin used to get together after ASCAP, the union meetings, in New York and go back to Berlin's apartment and schmooze and play songs and blah, blah, blah. And that's all I heard. And being a playwright, I thought, that's interesting. What if it were 1956? Because they met in the 40s and the 50s. And rock and roll is here. I said, they figure their careers are over. And that was the germ. That's what I started with.
And that's exactly how you start out the play.
I started to play, boom, our careers are over. There's a little stuff that we added where they're coming up in an elevator to Berlin's penthouse. And that was it. And then I better find out about these guys. I knew enough about Berlin. I got lucky because the three of them are so different. So different. And when you... The germ of any good play is characters, as far as I'm concerned. You get good characters, you can write a play. And so I did all the research. I went to Ted Chapin, who runs Irving Berlin's publishing company. And I said, Ted, I'd like to do a play about these three guys. He said, well, you'll have to write it before I get permission to give you the rights to the music, because I have to show it to his daughters. I said, oi. And I wrote it, and I gave it to Ted, and he showed it to the daughters, and they liked it, and I was off. And then we had to get the rights from the Arlen and blah, 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 and all that stuff. But that was the beginning. And then, as I always do with the play, I got together actors in my apartment, and we read it. And I got singers to sing it, myself included, and my music director. And then I had a grunt session afterwards and broke the play down, and it needed to be more of a play. There wasn't enough conflict. I didn't want it. The one thing I did not want it to be three guys saying, oh, wait, and then I wrote this, and then I wrote this, and then I wrote this, and it's basically what they call now a jukebox musical. No, this is a play. And I had to have something happen, some kind of conflict and resolution. And it was an odd thing. I've never seen anything like it. Maybe you have. I've never seen anything like it in New York or anywhere else where you have this odd combination. And a lot of people didn't understand it. The man talking to me now understood it terrifically, that this was a play with great music in it, not a musical. And that's what happened. And then I did... I showed it to Kate McGuire, who is the artistic director at the Berkshire Theater Festival, and she said, well, I like it. I'd like to do a reading, and we had a reading last October. And then she said, let's do it. That's opened the season.
Well, as I said, I really did like the play because it is a play with a musical, and it really does get into the characters. But before we get into that, this whole notion that they come back from an ASCAP meeting, which is true, which you heard about, and they bemoan the fact that Elvis is here to stay.
Right.
That's not just a little event, because I want you to talk a little bit about this. I've got a friend, John Miller in Cornwall, who's a Broadway – he used to write for the Today Show, and he's a Broadway aficionado. And he has made the point to me repeatedly in our forays to the theater that rock and roll was critical because before that, the musical theater, the Broadway stage, was really the source of the great American song. And when that shifted, it became – the 45 RPM and the radio. Talk about that, because it's huge.
When I was growing up and I was a kid, you know, King and I, South, all the great Rogers and everything. I mean, what got me into the theater was seeing Guys and Dolls. I went, whoa, I want to do this. And all of those, you know, Lerner and Lowe, all of those songs then went from the stage and then became hit songs.
On radio. Right.
Yes, that, and then it didn't. It was an odd transition when rock and roll came in, because there were musicals that tried to do rock music. Well, if you go now to the theater, that's what you get. I'm sorry, I'm not an aficionado of the latest Broadway stuff, in which you don't have melodic songs. You have confessional songs, and you got rock songs, and I don't know. The kids love it, I guess, but I think, and there's a line in the play in which Irving Berlin says to Jimmy Van Heusen after he plays one of his songs, he says, "Great melody. Melody gets you right here," pointing to his solar plexus. Because to me, writing a play, my first job is to move an audience. I want to make them laugh, but to move them, have some...
It's called catharsis.
Well, exactly. Right. And good music does that.
Yeah.
And the music does it, strangely enough, more than the lyrics. Because... I always point to there's a place for us in West Side Story, and Bernstein does this octave jumping da da da, and when the music jumps, your insides jump,
your heart springs.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
And there's no substitute for it.
Yeah. In case you're just joining us, my guest today is Lee Kalsheim, and he's just written this really really neat musical, or I should say, a play with music. Called Coming Back Like a Song, that's up at the Berkshire Theatre Group in Stockbridge until July 19th. Okay, let's talk about...
21st.
The 21st.
Give us two more performances.
All right. Oh, they did. Yeah. Good. Let's get to the characters. Berlin, Arlen, and Van Heusen. There's a joke that they make in the middle of the play about everybody has changed their names, and maybe Berlin and Arlen did it for different reasons than Jimmy Van Heusen. Talk about that.
Well, Irving, what I love about Irving Berlin is that he came here at 5 years old from Russia, spoke no English, and then the man not only writes music, which you can do, but he writes his own lyrics, and they're wonderful. You know, to learn the language well enough to write fabulous lyrics is terrific. Arlen, so he was Isadora Baleen and changed it to Irving Berlin. Harold Arlen, both of their fathers were cantors, by the way. Yeah. When Berlin got here, his father couldn't get a job as a cantor. I forget what he did, living on the Lower East Side. But Harold Arlen's father was a cantor, and hoped that his son would be. His son became a very successful, funny fit in the play, where Arlen's father, when he became famous for Stormy Weather, writing Stormy Weather, when he came to visit his father in Buffalo, and his father made him sing Stormy Weather in the synagogue. So he completely turned around and said, "Oh, I have a famous son, sing! You know, sing on the High Holy Day," whatever the hell it was. And he was Chaim Arlok, and changed it to Harold Arlen. Jimmy Van Heusen was Chester Babcock, and he didn't like the last name for obvious reasons. And in real life, he was looking out his window in his office in Syracuse, and he saw a big ad for Van Heusen shirts. He said, "I'll take that name." And that's how it happened.
That's great.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you've got these three characters. You've just given us a little bit about the background. You talked about needing to have a good play to find conflict. So how did you come up with where Berlin and Harold and Chester, otherwise known as Jimmy Van Heusen, were going to collide, besides you Gigos, who are all genius at writing music?
Well, I know they were going to collide because they met. This was legit. I knew they met, and I was lucky that they met and not, I mean, it could have been any three guys. These three are so different, so different. It seems odd that they would meet. Although Arlen and Berlin talked almost every day on the phone. And Jimmy was one of Sinatra's Rat Pack, quite different from them, younger than the other two. Arlen was, I mean, Berlin, I think, was already 69 years old. He lived 101. And when I read the material on the biographies, there was no biography on Van Heusen, but a lot about, in Sinatra's bios, there was a lot about Van Heusen. And then you start finding information, and you found out that Arlen's wife, who was a gorgeous woman, a chorus girl, a Conover model, she was a Brecht model, the blonde hair.
Sure.
Had mental problems and was eventually institutionalized, and it broke his heart. And it's a lot of it's in the play. As a matter of fact, if there's a plot for the play, it's getting her, springing her from the sanatorium to come home for Christmas, and this Berlin does because, with his clout and his money. Yeah.
But you take Harold Arlen's devotion to his wife, even though he experienced a lifetime of woe with her mental illness.
Yes.
You contrast that with a unique kind of behavior pattern that Jimmy Van Heusen presents.
Right. Well, this is what the playwright's hard job. We'll get back to how the songs got in. But when I saw that, I said, okay, this is a drive forward. Can we get this? Can we reunite them at least for Christmas? And here's Van Heusen, on the other hand, who couldn't keep a woman. He was always getting sloppy seconds from Sinatra. It's a part of the story of how Angie Dickinson was shared by Sinatra with Jimmy Van Heusen. And he never had a significant relationship. You know, he had all these women around because they were always around Sinatra.
Where did you find the tidbit that he actually, that it ended up, I think, in one of the tabloids in New York, that he was a patron of prostitutes?
Oh, I don't remember what book, but that's all true.
Yeah.
And actually, there's a long story, and it's my favorite part of the play, that David Rashi just kills it, about a woman he met horseback riding. And Jimmy Van Heusen was a test pilot during the war and almost got killed a couple of times. And a daredevil, he flew his own plane. He never took commercial planes, all the way across from L.A. back and forth. And he met this woman riding in a riding trail in Palm Springs or wherever it was. And that's all I knew. It wasn't much to it. And then I elaborated on it. And you get his yearning. Mm-hmm. And so it's that's another story that has to be resolved. Will he find someone ever? He
right.
did. He eventually got married.
So you've got a macho playboy,
right.
Jimmy Van Heusen, and you've got a kind of neurotic nebbish of a Harold Arlen devoted
right.
to his wife who's in a sanitarium
right.
probably forever. And then you've got Irving Berlin who's got this huge ego but sort of, you know, the show must go on. He's got one of those personalities.
Yes,
and you've got them, you know, mediating with each other.
Well, that's
for
a nice combo
minutes.
When you
yeah,
get three
great.
That different.
So how do you work in all these fabulous songs?
Well, you're not going to write. I'm sorry. It is required. God says you cannot write a play about these three guys and not have them sing those songs.
Right.
And I said, well, how do you put them in there? Arbitrarily. How do you mean? Well, I'll sing this. And so I got a list of all the songs that they'd written, and I knew them. I can sing every song on the show, just about.
Yeah.
And I looked at them, and I said, okay, Harold Arlen, listen, Over the Rainbow, The Man That Got Away, that everybody's got to do those, Stormy Weather. And Berlin, you can go with this. And the Van Heusen songs are less known, Darn That Dream, and Here's
Beautiful
That
Melody.
Here's That
Beautiful
Rainy Day.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. And Van Heusen is largely known as a composer, not a lyricist, although he did
no, neither. Well, no, Arlen never was a lyricist. But
right.
Yip Harburg wrote.
Right.
Ira Gershwin wrote the lyrics to Man That Got Away and Yip Harburg to Over the Rainbow. No, yes, and
yeah.
Yip Harburg also to Lydia, which is a terrifically funny song, the Groucho Marx song. But so the hard part of it was integrating the songs in the play so that they don't stick out. So two things helped. One is I just did my homework. I said the songs, unlike a musical, now it's a shibboleth that the music has to, when you're writing a book for a musical, when the characters has so much emotion that they can't go any further, then they sing. And so I've written musical books. They're awful to write because then what happens is your best speech, your best moment is taken, and I like to write lyrics. They're really fun. And then you make it into a song. And the book writers never get enough credit because a lousy book, no matter how good the music is, you'll never get a good musical out of it. I remember seeing My Fair Lady when I was a kid in Philadelphia before I got to New York, and I went to see, well, he took a great show play and just added songs. What's so, you know, big deal? And then years later, I directed it in Summerstock. I said, where's the music? I directed Pygmalion. But this was not a musical. And so I had to say, okay, I've got a real play here. There are real conflicts. Real stuff is going on. And then they're going to sing. And so I found songs that release the emotional content of the character. And so that they sat down to sing, but what was going on in their lives came out through the song. So when Arlen sings Over the Rainbow, it ain't Judy Garland singing. It's Arlen wishing that there was a spot over the rainbow for him, because he's in the toilet with his wife, institutionalized. And the man that got away is really him.
Yeah.
You know, I got away from the love of my life.
You mentioned two of the three high spots I found in the play. Those solo numbers that you give. Who's the actor that plays Harold Arlen, by the way?
Philip Hoffman.
Yeah, he's a wonderful actor. But those two solos, Over the Rainbow and The Man That Got Away, which is, I got to say, one of probably my all-time favorite song anyway, are just really remarkable. There's so many songs we could talk about in the play. Talk about the Lydia song, because that is really that's the other high point for me in the play.
It's just a story.
It's so funny.
Groucho Marx was a pain in the ass to work with for for Berlin because he would improvise. I won't give away one of the funnier lines on the show. I didn't write it. It was in my research when working. George Coffin. I will give this one away. George Coffin's working. And he leans over, and Marx and his Marx brothers are doing Coconuts, which is now a movie, and. George Kaufman leans over to Irving Berlin and says, I just think I heard one of my lines, because they would improvise, you know, boom, boom, boom. And you had to let them because they were funny. Actually, in that show was the song Always, which he wrote. He had missed it. He was missing. His first wife died just
Talking about Irving Berlin.
Irving
now.
Berlin's first wife died 5 months after they were married.
Of typhoid or something, wasn't it?
I
Googled it, and they went to if I'm remembering this right now from my looking at, they went to Cuba, and she picked up typhoid.
Oh. Yeah. It was awful.
Yeah.
And he mourned, and he wrote this song about missing her. No, that wasn't Always. What was it?
Yes, it was. I think it was.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because he it took him 12 years, and then he met this upper class woman and
a Roman Catholic Irish.
Yes.
Yes.
And a very wealthy father, who said, I'm not going to have this singing Jew marry my daughter. Well, he was worth millions of dollars, and actually, the father lost all his money in the Depression, and this is not in the play. Berlin gave him $1 million. Said, sure. Here, you know, take care of yourself.
In case you're just joining us, the guest is Lee Kalsheim. He's the playwright, written for television, for the stage, for the movies and everything. He's a playwright who's got this marvelous play with lots of songs called Coming Back Like a Song. Until July 21st at the Brookshire Theater Group in Stockbridge. So we're talking about the play that's about Irving Berlin, Harold Arlen, and Jimmy Van Heusen, all great songwriters. There's one point in the play where what struck me about Berlin is that he's got a huge chip on his shoulder. He's a huge success. He's got a huge ego, but he's still got a chip on his shoulder. But on the other hand, he's a real nebbish. He's a generous, really kind of nice guy. Is that the right kind of take? I mean, I'm getting to the question.
No, it is. It's interesting because, I met his daughter, who's 91, and I went out for tea at her apartment. She gave me some really good notes about him. He was not known as a terribly available person. Right. He was tough. Mm-hmm. You know, listen, he published his own songs. So he always owned the rights to his own song. That's why he made so much money. Every sheet music, everything. All these other guys, Arlen was published by something else. Van Heusen's published by something. No, Berlin kept all the profits.
But except for God Bless of America, right?
Well, he gave that away as for charity to the Boy Scouts.
Yeah.
But, yes, he was not known. To his good friends, he was good and generous. By my reading, I got this in the play, that he always felt that he was overlooked. For instance, as Arlen. Arlen was a consummate musician, a good, wonderful singer. He performed, and his music, and particularly Gershwin. You know, Gershwin was looked at as, well, he wrote symphonies.
He was the artist.
He was the artist. Right. He was a great composer. And Berlin wrote these little silly tunes. And I, as a playwright, I said, that must gnaw at you.
Yeah.
If you're known as the American composer,
right.
But you don't have respect,
right?
You know.
And he gave Gershwin a break when Gershwin started out, right?
Well, he hired Gershwin because Gershwin was so good a pianist that when he played Irving's songs and Irving couldn't play the piano, he said, "You're good. You're too good for me to work for me." And then Gershwin wins the Pulitzer Prize,
yeah.
And I'm sure it hurt Pulitzer Schmulitzer, he says, you know.
Yeah.
And you see of the I Sing Now, it ain't that good. look, I love Gershwin's music, please. But Berlin's, the more you hear of Berlin and the simplicity of his songs, which he says, I make them simple. They don't come out simple.
Well, you construct a wonderful scene in the play around that.
Yes.
Yeah. Tell us about it, because it's a marvelous little...
Well, Berlin, I think it starts with Van Heusen saying, come on, we'll write a rock and roll. I mean, we got three composers. We can certainly write a rock and roll song. And Irving says, no, that's crap. I don't want to do that. And he says, well, you can knock it off. And that hits us. That hits something in Berlin. Says, I don't knock anything off. That's what people think because, you know, they think my songs are so simple that I must just, boom, knock them off. And he says, I make them simple. And he goes over to the piano, and he hits the notes, and he sings this song. And he says, you know, this took a hard work making them, simplifying them, making them. And then he sings the songs, and it's gorgeous. And then I am actually in many ways more impressed with his lyrics as a man who was a second language. Now, 5 years old, you learn, I mean, Tom Stoppard, it was Czech, and then his second language is English, and he writes this brilliant stuff, but he was an adult. But one of the things, it's not in the play, is that I don't know whether it was because he was not born here. He takes American expressions like, let's face the music and dance. Let's face the music and dance. It's an idiomatic expression. Turns it into a song. And he does that over Change Partners, all of them. But the lyric to Isn't It a Lovely Day to Go Out in the Rain? And he
Isn't
says, the clouds
a lovely
broke.
Day, da, 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 da,
yeah,
da.
He says, the clouds broke, they broke, and oh, what a break for me. Well, that's just wonderful.
Yeah.
That's just wonderful, crafty. You know, everybody worships Sondheim. And Sondheim is wonderful. I don't think his tunes are nearly every so often. But his tunes aren't as memorable as Berlin's. They don't stick. Wonderful lyricist.
Right.
You know, when he wrote Gypsy, he wanted to write, Sondheim wanted to write the music to Gypsy.
Merman.
Merman
said,
no.
Merman, no. Merman didn't want to work with an amateur or a young guy.
Who is this guy?
Yeah.
Well, it turned out to be, I think it's his best score, but he's wonderful. It's just that Berlin gets short shrift.
Yeah. The play is sprinkled with all kinds of little showbiz gossip and anecdotes, which don't take away from the characters, but that just all of a sudden pepper it with something else. I love the little story you work in about Ethel Merman.
Oh,
yeah.
Bird's
Eye. Yeah. I read it,
I'm sure, in the Berlin book.
Yeah.
That she came in and he wanted to make changes. And she says, no more changes. Frozen. No, Bird's Eye, she says. And nobody knew what that meant. I think people know today. Is the Bird's Eye Frozen Field still around? I'm not sure.
I don't know.
She said, Bird's Eye.
Yeah.
Well, Bird's Eye what? Frozen. No more changes.
That's wonderful.
Yeah.
Getting back to Berlin, and he has this fabulous penthouse, and you get the play to the point where he really is expressing, you know, besides his hard cross, some genuine care for his buddies.
Yes.
And he turns around and he gives this really, really huge present to Harold Arlen. Is that – I don't care whether it's real or not, but it's a fascinating
stories about
little,
the play.
In
the original of the draft of 2 months ago, he gives a painting to Harold Arlen. Arlen goes into his bedroom to make a phone call, actually to the doctor at the sanitarium for his wife. And he comes out and he says, that painting, and originally it was a Matisse. He says, that Matisse in your bedroom, it's beautiful. And Irving goes in and he says, take it. He says, I can't take this. He says, well, I don't see it. I've got paintings all over the place. You love it, take it.
It was a Matisse.
That's what I put in the play.
Right.
So Ellen Barrett, Mary Ellen Barrett, the daughter, gave me a list of notes. And one of them says, we didn't own a Matisse. Irving, my father did not own a Matisse. He had a Chagall lithograph. And I wrote back, I said, a Chagall lithograph isn't worth that much because, first of all, there's a lot of them made, A, and they're black and white. The lithograph, I said, how about if I make it a silk screen? Because you can do silk screens in color. They're harder to make because every color you put on is another print, you see. Mm-hmm. And she said, okay. So it became a Chagall silk screen. Berlin never gave anybody a painting.
No.
I made that up.
That's
but
good.
She didn't object to that.
That's great. No, that's fine. No, because what it does in the play is that it sets the stage for, before we get to the conclusion of the play, how he really consequentially intercedes in his friend's behalf, which is really nice. That's great. The question just popped into my head that I wanted to ask, and I just sort of lost it. What's your favorite Berlin song?
Oh, gosh. Well, you know, the play is called Coming Back Like a Song, and I never knew the song very well. But there's one line in that song that just gets me every time. And now I'm going to have to go through the lyrics to remember. I fell in love with the song. I don't know. They're all compelling. I love Cheek to Cheek. You know, all of the stuff that Astaire sang. I have an album of just Astaire and piano. And because Astaire was not a great singer, but and Gene Kelly either, but they knew how to.
But it doesn't matter.
Berlin songs.
Yeah,
no.
They could get the lyric. I knew where I wanted to ask you, and I don't think we're giving too much away. The actors who play these three guys are really skillful actors. Two of them, at least, have really musical theater chops. But there's a lot of piano playing, and there is a theatrical sleight of hand that occurs in the production. Did you anticipate that when you wrote the play?
Oh, no. I figured I'm not going to get three actors who can play the piano.
Right.
I'm not going to get it. I didn't quite know how we would do it, but I knew it could be done.
Yeah.
And it's done here. You know, I knew that we'd have to hide. If we got actors who didn't play, we'd have to hide their fingers. I didn't know how effective it would be.
Well, it's very effective because the sound is – I don't know who the sound engineer for the production
was. Well, that
was
the problem because we came in to when we moved into the theater, and there's a grand piano on stage, and this is no big deal, but there is our music director is off stage, hidden, because you don't want to hear him playing the piano, and it's piped into the – and there are video cameras – on the hands of the actors playing and also on the stage, so you can see when they cross to the piano. And at the first tech rehearsal, I said, the piano's awful. It sounds like a bad upright. And the sound guy is a genius. He said, we'll fix it. I said, no, you got to get big speakers. What do I know? I'm quelling. Not quelling, I'm complaining. I quelled later, for you people who don't know Yiddish. And he just worked at it and worked at it and worked at it. And he got it, too. So you don't know they're not playing. And for all of you who hopefully will see it, you forget that.
Well, you do, and it's marvelously
done. Well,
two
of them play.
Yeah.
Garrison and Rashi both play piano. I mean, not well enough to have done this.
Right.
But they know, you know.
Right. And they know how to move their hands across
everything.
The keys.
Everything. The pedals, everything.
Well, it's marvelously entertaining and fun. And you bring us a trip down memory lane for these three great American songwriters. And it's a trip down memory lane for any American who's ever turned on a radio or listened to a stereo. Do you remember those? In any event, I want to thank you, Lee Kalsheim, for coming on Off Script. My guest, again, Lee Kalsheim, who's the author of the play with music, with lots of music, coming back like a song, which you can see at the Fitzpatrick stage of the Berkshire Theatre Group in Stockbridge until July 21st. Thank you for joining us. If you've liked this program and others that you've heard on Robin Hood Radio, please go to robinhoodradio.com, go to the support page and express your appreciation. Thanks for listening. Until the next time, as a dear departed friend of mine used to say, be well.
Underwriting support for Off Script with Dan Dwyer from Johnny Cake Books in Salisbury, Connecticut, whose collection of rare collectible and out-of-print books is housed in a 19th century cottage in one of the most old-fashioned small towns in New England. Off Script with Dan Dwyer is also available via podcast on our on-demand page, robinhoodradio.com. Click on On Demand and then click on Off Script with Dan Dwyer.